This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 164 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me from the land of the long white cloud via Skype, long-time Shutters Inc. listener, multiple published photo book author, Mr. Mike Holman. Welcome aboard.
G'day, mate. How's it going?
Very well. And yourself?
Oh, very well, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Likewise. Now, the reason I've invited Mike along for this episode of Shutters Inc. was because Mike dropped me a message on Facebook a couple of days ago and said, you know, congrats on the shooting gig for next week with Outback New South Wales Tourism. And, you know, he said that he had had, you know, experience in this field, and that if there was any, you know, tips that he might share with me, he was more than happy to get on Skype and have a chat and just, you know, give me some feedback on things to expect and, you know, potential speed humps that I should look out for. So I thought, well, why not make this an episode of the podcast? Because I'm sure that, you know, there's probably some things you're going to talk about, Mike, that will be relevant to other listeners as well.
Yeah, no problem. No worries, mate. I mean, I was listening to your last episode of Shutters Inc. and you mentioned that you've got the shoot coming up.
Yeah.
Which is going to be a big week for you. And, there's a few sort of things. I've been through that. I'm doing another book at the moment. And I remember when I did my first one, and I probably shot most of it in about three quarters of it in about 6 weeks. And just trying to get my head around that and plan it was a big thing. And it was really exciting to start with, and you know, it was a real challenge. But then probably about 2 hours after signing the contract, I sat down and thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this? What have I done? How can I get myself out of it? But no, you know, and then you've got to just sit down and have a plan and sort it out and just work through it bit by bit. And I think you mentioned you're going away. What is it, for a week or so?
Yeah, 1 week. I'll leave here on Sunday and get back on the following Saturday.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least you're dictated by that time frame. So there's only so much you can do within that. But you're saying you're looking at a few hundred images.
300 to 400 images, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you realize you're going to have to shoot a lot more than that once you edit it down to a few hundred.
Yep.
So, and then, of course, you're dictated by the weather, you're dictated by the time of day.
Yep.
So you've got to take that all into consideration as well.
Well, I did ask the client about the weather. I said, you know, what do we do if the weather's absolutely abhorrent? And she said, well, you know, we just deal with it as best we can. So I figured, okay, that's part of being a professional photographer, is that you just have to get out there and make the most of whatever the gods throw at you. So...
Oh, exactly, mate, and that's the thing. If you've got a project or an assignment to do, and you've got a time frame to do it, you just got to put up with whatever happens.
Yeah,
you know, if the weather's crap and you know, it's raining the whole time, you just got to make the best of it. And a lot of the times, actually, your worst enemy in those sort of shooting is bright sunshine and contrast.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, overcast weather is going to be your friend when you're shooting, especially urban forests and things like that as well. You know, so
yeah.
You know, because when I shot my first book in those days, I was shooting everything on slide film. So right. In those days, the publisher would only accept transparency. So I would go away I was probably shooting on medium format, shooting Velvia.
What gorgeous film.
It's lovely.
I love Velvia.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, you've got a lot less to work with when you're shooting, you know, in those days when you shot on a slide, you had to get your exposures right.
Yes.
Because it was very easy to blow out the highlights with the slide, of course.
Did you ever deliberately shoot half a stop under to get that extra?
I always went right at 40 ASA in those days, so 40 ISO. It was 50 ISO film. I rated it at 40, so you're giving an extra third of a stop under to really saturate it.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, you had to know how to expose properly. And of course, and you know, I'd go away shooting, and then in New Zealand, there was only Auckland that you could really get your trannies
processed.
So I'd go away and shoot for 2 weeks, and you wouldn't know for 2 weeks if you made a mess of it. So if you're going away somewhere a little bit remote, you know, you sort of have to get it dead on.
We are very spoiled these days, really, aren't we?
Well, mate, it's great to have an LCD to look in the back of to see what you're getting.
Yeah.
it makes life so much easier. And of course now, you know, I'm using Lightroom 3 and CS5 now, mainly Lightroom for most of my post-production work. A little bit of CS5 if I have to go into that if I'm doing any layers and bits and pieces. But it's just, I mean, you know, I shoot in RAW, so if you have to, you can, in post, you can change your color space and all that sort of thing. It's just so much easier. It's great.
Yeah. So other than the weather, what other potential hurdles might I be facing?
Well, the biggest thing is have good communication with the people that you're working with. And like, if, know what their expectations are before you go, and maybe get it. Like what I normally do, what I'm doing at the moment with this current book I'm doing, is that I'll meet with my editor, and they will print out a shoot list for me of exactly what they want. So the communication is very strong, so we know exactly what we're doing. So I know what I know what I have to go and shoot. So it depends on the book. The first one I did was a lot easier. They said, we'll leave it up to you. You go out and shoot what you think looks good, just cover these areas. The one I'm doing at the moment has specific places and items that I have to photograph. So I have a specific list that I go and work to, and I just tick it off as I go through. Yeah. But then again, you know, I'm working and I don't want to have to go back to a remote location more than once or twice. I'll go back. I've got the luxury this time because I've got to the end of next year to finish this. So I can go initially to scout locations and scout and see what the best time of day to go is. And then I can go back and shoot it, or if it suits or it's good while I'm there, I'll shoot it then as well.
Hey, listen, while you're talking about, you know, going at the right time of day, I've got to share this with you. Have you heard of a piece of software called the Photographer's Ephemeris?
Oh, the photographer's ephemeris.
Yes. Have you heard of it?
Interesting.
Mate, it is awesome. It is totally awesome. For those who don't know, what this is a basically built on top of Google Maps. Or at least I think it's using Google Maps. It might not be, but it uses map data. So you can pinpoint a location that you want to shoot from. And it will draw lines to show you this is the angle that the sun will be rising from. This is the angle the sun will be setting to. This is the angle the moon will be rising from. And it shows you, you know, the sunrise and sunset and...
I've got one exactly like that too, mate, but it's not called that. My one I use is called Light Track.
Oh, okay.
Which is exactly the same. I've got it loaded. You can get it for iPhone and iPad, I think. So it's obviously an application for the Mac, for iPhones and iPads.
Well,
but it does exactly the same thing. Gives you angle of sun, so you know, which is very handy because within the sun setting, of course, this doesn't go straight down; it tracks, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
So this will give you exactly where it's going to set, what time, and more importantly, how much twilight you've got. After the sunset as well, because you've got that whole different quality of life. You know, once the sun has gone down, a lot of people think that's it, let's stop shooting. And there's a good half hour, and it's a beautiful light.
That's when the fun starts.
Exactly. And what I like doing too is using that, another component in my photography is time. So I like using long exposures. So I love putting like a 10-stop ND filter on my lenses and getting up to like 3 or 4 minute exposures, which is, gives it a whole different element.
Yeah, right.
And gives it a different look as well.
You know, I wanted to ask you about that. Whose 10-stop filter do you use?
B plus W. Is it B and W? So it's B plus W filters.
Right.
I use that for the 10-stop. And it's very good quality. You don't get any color shift really in that.
I was going to say, that's always the big issue is the color shift. Yeah.
They're not cheap though. Aussie dollars... we're probably looking at 150.
Okay.
For say a 77. Now that's just a plain ND filter. So you know, that's I shoot most of my lenses I'm shooting with at the moment are 77 mil.
Yeah.
So I can use that on all the other ones. My other grads that I use, and when I talk about grads, I'm talking about filters that the graduate neutral density, which hold back part of the image, like in the sky, which is most important.
Yep.
I use Lee filters,
okay,
which are made in Britain and very good quality. They do a lot of filters for the lighting industry and movies and things, but they also make filters for cameras. And they are just those big 120 size ones that you slide into a holder.
Right.
So you can adjust those up and down.
So are they compatible with, say, a Koken filter system?
Yeah, well, the Koken has another one called the Z. They have a Z series, I think it's called, which is the take the largest one, which is bloody hard to find anyway.
Right.
In New Zealand, I'm not sure who. I think Panavision here are the agents in New Zealand. I'm not sure who does it in Australia, but I know that you can get hold of them. But I would highly recommend the Lee.
Yeah, right.
Or if you've got a lot of extra casket, the Singrays, which are very nice, made in the States.
Yeah, right.
But they're not cheap.
nothing is in photography.
No, but I mean, if the thing is, you're only going to buy it once, so it lasts. Yeah. It's like it's going to last you a lifetime. Yeah. And they're good. Well, you want something that's not going to put a color cast. If you've got a neutral density filter, you want something. You don't want something that's going to cause maybe a magenta color cast or something like that.
Yeah.
The ones I use most of the time for my landscape shooting anyway would be neutral density graduated filters.
Yeah, same.
Plus the NDs, because it just gives you a whole different look to it. And I can shoot the same thing without it, and maybe like with a 1 or 2 second exposure and pop that on and go up to 3 or 4 minutes, and it just changes the whole look of the scene.
Yeah.
Gives it a real ethereal sort of look about it.
Yep. Yep.
So I've been actually putting some of those on Facebook lately. We've just been down in Queenstown again shooting, and in New Zealand.
Yeah.
We've been just doing some shots, like what we said, with some of the longer exposures as well. So
nice.
Which has been great.
So
getting back to your original question, as far as when you with your assignment coming up. If you can, have they given you much leeway as far as what they want you to shoot, or have they given you a shoot list that they want you to cover?
It's a little bit of both, actually. They've given me a handful of things that they definitely want covered, but the rest of it is pretty much up to my discretion. Mm. The great thing is that they have handed me the two previous catalogues that have been done. And said, this is the kind of thing we're after again. Basically, we just want some variation in what we've got. They said we've already got all the images that we need. We just don't have much variation in them. And I think it's really just a case of they just want to freshen up what they've got. So I'm really being given. To be honest, I think this is a nice first assignment because. There's quite a lot of leeway for me to shoot at my own discretion, to not have an art director over my shoulder, sort of applying pressure.
Oh, exactly.
And they've given me, like I said, a few things that they definitely want covered, which is great. I can go and make sure I get those shots. But they've also given me the freedom to shoot the rest pretty much as I see fit.
So this is going to be used in the brochures and bits and pieces for Tourism New South Wales?
Yeah, it's like a 40-odd page Outback New South Wales tourism brochure that just covers one particular shire.
Oh, that's great. So, I mean, the largest size you're really going to be shooting for in that case is like an A4, isn't it?
Yeah.
For a full page. So you don't have to worry too much about huge enlargements for posters and bits and pieces, I guess.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't matter if I did. I mean, I'm shooting an Alpha 850, so...
Was that 24 megapixels?
Yeah, exactly.
You're fine, mate. I mean, you can shoot a billboard.
Exactly.
But, that's a really good first assignment. That's a great way to start off. And it's a lot of flexibility.
The only thing that I'm a little bit nervous about is that they've given me a whole bunch of model release forms and basically said, we want 2/3 of the images to have people in them. So I've basically got to walk up to complete strangers and say, hey, this is who I am and this is what I'm doing. Are you happy to have your photograph taken? And are you prepared to sign a model release so that we can use it in a brochure? Now, the client seems to think that I won't have any problem with this, that there will be, plenty of willing participants. I'm just...
Well, to be quite honest, Bruce, they're probably right.
Okay.
In your own mind, it's the most frightening thing and the hardest thing to get past is go up to complete strangers and say, can I take your photo and do you mind signing this?
Yeah.
Take their photo first, then get them asked. You want to get in. Take their photo first and then see if they'll sign it. And I'm sure I said 90% of the time you'll be fine. Yeah. Just explain what it's for. Just be upfront with people. Well, and if you approach someone openly and friendly and say, this is what I'm doing, and explain it, you know, I don't think you'll have a problem. But the hardest thing is actually just doing it.
Yeah, well, that's...
I always have a problem.
That was pretty much the attitude from the client. She said, look, you know, most of these people who are up there holidaying, you know, if once they know that they could potentially end up in a brochure for Outback New South Wales Tourism, she said most of them would be pretty happy to sign a model release. So
exactly, and you just be up and open and
yeah, oh, absolutely.
Don't hide behind the trees with your televoto lens. Self arrested, man. But you know, that's one of the biggest hurdles everyone has to get through is actually this. Shooting people, and I mean it is editorial, I guess. It's, I mean, in some respect, but it's, you know, once you've got everything covered like that, you're going to be fine.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like you're shooting an ad campaign or anything as such. It's just, it's an editorial piece for the New South Wales Tourism, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and if you, of course, if you're shooting a crowd of people, you can't get everyone's model release, so it
doesn't, no,
too concerned with that. But if you're singling people out, of course, they're going to feature large in the photo.
Yeah.
Best to get that covered.
That's an interesting question, actually. If is there some sort of threshold according to, you know, what percentage of the frame the person fills as to whether or not you need a model release?
Well, I think if they're prominent and easily identified, mate, I think you probably would be the best idea to, if you can identify someone on the photo, I think
yeah,
is probably relevant. You'd probably have to ask Mr. Freiberg, our friend in Brisbane, that he may know that.
Yeah, right.
He's not a copyright lawyer, but I think if they're easily identifiable, yeah, at best.
Fair enough. That makes sense.
But I would use that guide. Yeah. You know, if it's a silhouette of someone in the background, I'm not going to pick one.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. Yeah, yeah.
Getting a release for that, you know. And you know how many images you've seen in magazines and newspapers of people, and you know there's no way they've ever got model releases.
Yeah.
But I'll do what you can to get that covered. That's probably going to be the hardest bit for you to get past, is walking up to strangers. But just be forthcoming, saying, this is what I'm doing.
Yep.
This is what it's going to be used for. And I think I'd say 90% of the time you'll be fine. You get very few people, unless they're up to something dodgy that you've taken up.
Yeah.
They won't worry about it.
The client is going to provide me with a letter of introduction on their letterhead. So at least that will say, hey, you know, this is Bruce Williams. He's photographing on behalf of Outback New South Wales Tourism, blah, 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 blah. So at least that will give me a little bit of credibility. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. You're very credible in any way, I'm sure, anyway, Bruce. But, you'll be fine, mate. And, of course, have a good strategy for backing your photos up when you're away, because there's nothing worse than your hard drive dying and you losing all your photos.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm taking the laptop, but I was thinking I probably should just take a spare external USB hard drive as well.
As a minimum, mate.
Just so that I've got a duplicate.
Are you gonna? What size card are you shooting on?
A 4 gig Extreme 3.
Okay, how many of those have you got?
One. Because look, seriously, I get 107 images on that card, right? And I honestly don't know that I'm gonna shoot more than 100 images a day. Maybe I will, but maybe I should have a spare card just in case that one dies.
Yeah, definitely get a couple of spare cards. I mean, 4 gig cards these days are pretty cheap, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, and like the other thing I was going to say was, like, some people, you know, don't buy one big 16 or 32
on
it. Then if that goes, you've lost everything. I mean, I generally keep my cards to about 4
yep.
to 8 gigs, you know, because then you can spread it over. You're shooting a lot in one day. Like some of the, you know, I know sometimes I'll be shooting, a few hundred images maybe. Over a day, so I'll spread that over some cards. If I have one failure before I get a chance to back it up or download it, I know that I haven't lost everything.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
But my sort of idea is have a minimum of 3 copies.
Okay.
So I'll have it on my card, then I'll download it onto my laptop, and as soon as it's on my laptop, I will sync it straight up to an external hard drive, and I use those lacy rugged drives when I'm away.
Right.
Sync it straight up onto that. So I've always got it in 3 places.
Wow. Okay.
Generally, you don't want to lose it all once you've gone out there, and you want to take precaution. You want to be over careful than not careful enough.
Yeah, that's true.
Really, for your case, if you're minimum of 2, don't go less than having 2 copies of it.
Yeah.
I won't say 3, but just
fair enough. Fair enough.
You know. and having...
I suppose what I could do is I could take a handful of blank DVDs with me, and I could also burn DVD copies each night.
Yeah, you could do, but it's a bit of a hassle. I mean, DVDs don't really hold... They only hold, what?
4 gigs.
What, 4.5 gigs? 4.2 gigs these days.
So it's one card full to one disc.
Yeah, well, you could do it that way. Yeah, I mean, that's actually good. A lot of people would actually do it that way, because then you've got 1 4-gig card to one disc, so it's easier to, keep track of it.
Yeah.
So there's another way you could do it as well, depending how much time you've got in the evening to get backups. But I would say, in that case, put them onto the laptop, back it up to an external hard drive, and then maybe burn it to the...
Yeah. Okay.
And be careful. The other thing too is you've got to be careful if you're traveling about in the car. If you've burned it to an external hard disk or something like that, try to keep that with you, because if your car gets broken into, or your motel or whatever gets broken into, and you get your stuff stolen, you still copy elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if you've got it all backed up and it's packed in your car or back in the hotel room, and it gets all stolen, you've lost everything again.
Yeah, that's true.
So try and keep them apart if you can. I would suggest that. And maybe just what I do is I have the external hard drive. Once it's backed up on there, I'll just keep that with me in my camera bag, and if I'm away from the car or away from my laptop or something like that.
Right. Mm. Yeah, that's a good strategy.
So just be aware of that, because generally, nothing, you'll be fine, but just...
You don't want to take the risk, do you?
No, I mean, not that it's going to happen, mate, but just,
Yeah.
So I would go for a strategy of having your images backed up in 3 different places if you can. Good time is valuable, mate. You don't want to go and do it all again.
Yeah, exactly. Just getting back to filters, do you use colour graduated filters much?
No, never. I've never used colour graduated filters.
Fair enough.
Some people do, you see those ones, with tobacco grads and things like that, but it's not really my cup of tea.
Fair enough.
It's a taste, I guess.
Yep.
I'll work with what I've got in front of me. I don't try and enhance it with coloured filters in that way.
I suppose you can always simulate it in Lightroom later if you want to experiment, can't you?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah. But, it's how natural it's going to look afterwards, it's up to you. But the only filters I use are maybe a polarizer, and I use that mainly not for... if you're going to use it on bright sunny days, just be careful, because you have to make sure if you've got a wide angle that half your sky looking really polarized and blue and the other half not.
Yeah.
Doesn't look that natural. So just be aware of that. I mainly use my polarizers for on overcast days when I'm shooting in the forest or waterfalls, just to for a little bit of color saturation, also to get rid of any reflections and bits and pieces caused by water or just reflections off shining leaves and things like that.
Now, I've got another question for you. I've always in the past used a circular polarizer.
Yeah.
But I have in the last 12 months or so, thankfully, thanks to my wife, come by a Kokin filter system.
Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a non-circular polarizer? Like, can you just get them as a shoot?
There are linear polarizers, but I mean the Kokin ones, and I don't use them, but I presume they still work in a circular polarizer, because you're still rotating the front of the filter, right?
Oh, okay. So you put it in the holder and you rotate the holder.
Yeah. The only thing that's not circular is because it's in a square holder, but you still rotate in a circular fashion.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing, but I think it's just because you've got it. I've seen the ones for the Kokin ones where you actually just slide it in, and you still rotate the front of the holder.
Right.
To get the polarizing effect.
Okay. Cool.
But I used to polarizers a lot more. I don't use them so much. When I first started off, I thought they were the best thing since sliced bread. But you have to be careful with them, especially on bright sunny days, because you can go a little bit overboard, and you can make the skies look a little bit unnatural if you don't get it even right across.
Yeah.
That'll look good with the Velvia in those days. That was pretty spectacular. Pretty saturated colours,
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. So, all I use now is polarizer, and I'd say mainly I use that is in the forests and waterfalls, low light, my neutral density and my neutral density graduated filters.
Yep.
And that's all about. And I just have protective filters on the front of my lenses, but make sure you get good quality ones, because if you're going to spend a lot of money on glass on lenses, you don't want to put rubbish filters up front.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because there seems to be two schools of thought about filters on front lenses. You know, people say I spend a fortune on filters. Why want to put a UV filter on the of a front of a $4,000 lens? You know, that's got the premium glass in it. But then the other school of thought saying, well, if you bang it against a tree, you break the filter and not the front lens, you know, the front of your lens.
Exactly.
Personal choice, really.
Yeah.
I think.
lots to think about.
Oh, mate, well, you know, and just sit down and plan it out. Plan out where you're going to go each day. Just write it, you know, you get a planner or get a whiteboard at home or whatever, and just plan it out like you were going to plan your shoots each day. Generally, I use the middle of the day, if it's a bright, sunny sort of day, or the harshest light, to scout for locations.
Right.
And then I'll shoot generally half an hour, start half an hour before sunrise. And of course, in New Zealand, the same as where you are, you know how contrasty that light can get.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't last, that beautiful golden light doesn't last that long sometimes.
No.
so I'll start maybe half an hour before, I'll plan it, and as I said, I use LightTrack, which is, I think it's an iPad.
Photographers Ephemeris is the same. They have an iPad and iPhone app. I don't think they've got an Android app yet, but I've put it on my laptop anyway.
You're an Android phone man. I've seen
I
you.
Am. I am. I'm a Fandroid. Yeah.
I think they're really valuable, especially if you're going somewhere you're not familiar with.
Yeah.
Just to know where the sun's going to be.
Yeah.
What angle it's going to be at, and how, you know, when you twilight it, that's the most important times for me anyway, a lot of times. You know, if I'm shooting on, if it's quite a heavy overcast day, I mean, it's great shooting in the bush or in the forest and can shoot that post.
Hey, listen, I wanted to ask a question. This is probably not really related to the stuff I'm going to shoot next week, but I noticed on your Facebook page last week, you had some images taken up above Queenstown where you had some quite decent star trails.
Oh, yes, yeah.
How long were those exposures and how were you powering the camera?
Well, yeah, they were just ones. Now, I mean, the best probably way to do star trails is to stack your images and do shorter exposures. With that one I did on there where I was just trying it out, they were about 45-minute exposures.
Wow.
And it was quite cold. And I've never seen my battery in my Nikon D700 go flat so fast, because your camera's on the whole time.
Yeah.
So that would drain, 45, 50 minutes, that was draining my battery.
Wow.
So I was just, to be quite honest, after a day shooting, we were just having a bit of fun, so we just set it up and said, let's get some star trails. My exposure time was dictated by how long my battery lasted. But what I could have done is I could have put a battery grip on. I had another battery in there, it would have been, you know, longer or whatever.
Right.
They were just 45-minute exposure, sitting at about 200 or 400 ISO at about f/5.6 or f/4 or something like that.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Just to see what it looks like.
How did you plan the exposure for it?
Just went and had a couple of drinks and came back and had a look at them.
Right.
We'll put it on, stick it on at about f/4. Focus, manual focus, because a lot of the lenses will focus past infinity. So if you actually focus past infinity, you'll be out of focus.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. So focus it at, stick it on f/4, it'll be 5.6. Focus it to infinity and leave it for half an hour. Just come and see what it looks like.
Wow. So it was just an experiment that worked.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it was sort of when we were in Queenstown with Creative Photo Workshops and Glenn and Shelton. And I remember Glenn went the first night, he was sticking his little Ricoh outside. And, you know, he just did the same sort of thing and stuck it on for about 20 minutes and then came back and saw what it looked like.
Yeah, right.
I'm not sure. I think you might have seen some of those images and some of the ones they did too at Lake Tekapo on their way back. And they got some beautiful images.
Right.
So that was a little bit inspired by Glenn.
Okay.
But after our workshop in Queenstown.
Excellent.
We were just having a bit of fun. Adam Davidson was, and Nat. Natalie DePetta was over as well, so yep. We all went and just stuck them out there and, yeah, had a bit of fun doing that.
Awesome.
It's always good. I mean, the best way really to do proper star trails is actually do just shorter exposures, then stack them up and combine them in Photoshop. And then
using your trick. Oh, I see. So you would like do maybe a 5-minute exposure, and then as soon as that one finishes, you'd start another one.
Yeah, and you can say if you had one of the a cable release that you could do, say, you could time it for that and just do an exposure. Say, stack a whole lot of 5 minutes, exposures.
Nice.
So then you're reducing, of course, how much noise you're going to put in the image as well, because the longer exposure, you get the noise.
Yeah.
The heat and the center and bits and pieces as well. So, and then you get the star trails. So if you're stacking them all together, of course, then you get the longer trails over that time as well.
Yeah, right.
Combine them all. And there is a program that you can use to actually do that. And I've forgotten the name, but Star something or other.
Right.
But if you Google Star Trails on Google, you'll find it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first time I've ever really done star trails, man. I'm not a huge fan.
Oh, okay.
I don't do a lot of astrophotography and such, but it was a bit funny that
night. So, I'll have to try my hand at it sometime.
Just go out one night and, try, and as long as there's not too much light pollution around.
Yeah, that's the thing. The ambient light would kill you.
Yeah, and it's surprising. I mean, those images we shot in Queenstown, it was looked pretty dark outside. But once, after a 45-minute exposure, I mean, the foreground and the mountains look like it's in the middle of the day just about.
Yeah. And do you have the Google Sky app?
I've got a couple of ones for astronomy and bits and pieces like that.
Oh, okay. So the I don't know if you've seen Google Sky. I've naturally got it on my Android phone. Basically, you fire it up and you hold it up in front of you, and as you turn yourself around physically, it remaps to show you what stars you're looking at and where the planets are and where each star is. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool.
There's a few of those around, I think, and they're great. I just love looking at astronomy and those sort of things anyway as well. So that's a whole other side of photography.
They're just great tools for photographers, you know.
Sure.
I went to the Visible Light seminar over the weekend, and I can't remember who one of the speakers was talking about all of these different tools that are available, and about having a tides app on your phone and how handy that can be, just to know.
It comes in very handy, because I was last week we were down south, and it was dictated by, I had to be at sunrise and sunset at this place at low tide, so I had no way to be there, and there was only one day that was sort of whether I could do it, so I sort of had to, I'm glad I had that on there, because there's nothing worse than turning up and at high tide when you want to be at low tide.
Yeah, exactly.
Gets a bit wet otherwise. Didn't bring the underwater housing, but most of your show, you probably won't have to worry about the tides next week.
No, I don't think so, no.
But, getting back to that, I would say, plan when you've got the harshest light during the days, that's when you can do your scouting, location scouting and bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Then, it's always finding the location and then going back in the night light.
Yeah.
Or the most frustrating, if you're somewhere where you don't know, it's very frustrating when you've got beautiful light and you don't know where to go to get the best, to make the most of it.
Yeah.
Landscapes,
Yeah.
That's the worst, I think.
Yeah.
But, as I say, get a good shot list and plan it out.
Yeah.
And make sure that, you have good communication from who you're working with, so they know what, to expect, and you know what they're expecting.
Yeah.
So work it through, sort of write down the must-have shots, and then you can work around other things as well to add to those. And shoot a lot. Memory's cheap these days. Shoot a lot.
Yeah.
Don't skimp, mate. Shoot as much as you can. But, shoot quality stuff, but shoot a lot. And when you get to an area, just explore all the angles that you can. Work the shot when you get to it.
Right.
Just don't set it up and shoot it and think that you've got it. Just go into a spot, settle in for a while,
yeah,
and then sort of get a sense of the place. Like, I'll go somewhere and I'll just settle into it if I'm not familiar with it. And it takes a bit of time. You've got to spend a bit of time to settle in and then just work the scene, you know.
Right.
And just shoot it from all different angles.
Okay.
Not just 360 degrees, but up and down as well.
Yeah, right.
From low point. And then also in your mind's eye, and I'm sure you do this as well, just visualize it how you see it. And if you see it as a wide angle or as telephoto. And I think I sort of tend to, when I'm doing a photo walk or if I'm walking around, I think I see it about 200 mil.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I see things at about 200 mils. I see things, I think, oh, shoot, like this and that. And a lot of the times I see, you know, telephotically, I guess.
Wow. Okay.
And it's a bit interesting. Next time you're out for a photo walk, see what you tend towards, and you think, but this is how I see. Some people see wide angle, some people see telephoto. I tend to see things at 200 mils.
Yeah, right.
For some reason.
I don't know. I don't think I have a one single focal length preference. I tend to just look at something and go, yeah, I can imagine this on a 20 mil wide, or I can imagine this on my 135 prime.
Me too, but I do that too. I mean, and like, you do have to do that as well, because it's part of exploring that image as well. But when I'm, you know, a lot of times when I'm just walking around and looking at stuff, I seem to see that sort of focal length for some reason. Just naturally, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so right. I have to think, you know, don't look at it like through a 200 mil lens. Think of it, how would it look like at 16?
Yeah.
Or, you know, how would it look like with, you know, in a different way.
Hmm.
But when I've got one lens and one camera, I'm going for a photo walk around the town, I'd say over half my images are shot at between 150 and 200 mil.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, and you ask different people, they see things different ways, just naturally, you know, first go to an image, you know, when they first see something.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. So, and I'm sure you'll have a great week shooting. What's the weather going to be like anyway? So did you say a bit of rain forecast?
Well, I haven't looked yet, because I figured, you know, there's no point looking too far ahead. So I haven't checked
yet.
There's
no point in sort of, yeah, I mean, and you don't want to get yourself worried too much about if it's going to be flooding or the storms or something like that. You know, I mean, so work with what you've got.
Yep.
And you'll get a bit of variety. What sort of countryside is it like when you're going?
Dry country. Although, I shouldn't say dry country, because they have had a hell of a wet season in the last 4 months. So yeah, it's going to be interesting.
So is it, I mean, it's coming up to the end of winter, isn't it? So are we talking about any like sort of wildflowers and spring sort of flowers starting that time of year as
there
well?
There should be a lot of wattle coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what other flowers there will be up there, but there should be, you know, some flowers coming out for spring.
Because I mean, you've got an idea what they've had already for the guide. So I mean, I would, you know, go by that, but then think to yourself, now how am I going to make that image different, and how am I going to put my own spin on this, and how am I going to make it look different from what's been shot before? And that's what you want to do too,
right?
And you know, You don't want to look like everyone else's shots that they've shot before. You know, put your own stamp on it. Think about how I can make this different, and how I can make it more compelling, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and use that. You know, use things like foreground interest, you know, composition and things like that for, you know, and judging by the photos you took last time you went around there, mate, you shouldn't have any problem looking at those photos you had on Facebook last trip.
Yeah. You know? I had a great trip. Yeah.
And like, that's what you did. You used elements in there, didn't you? You used, like, with, you know, from memory, you did, like, there was like old buildings and
absolutely,
like that you can use, you know, for points of interest.
Yep. I've just called up the weather for Walgett. Monday, drizzle, 30% chance of rain.
So drizzle's not rain, that's just drizzle.
So we'll see how we go when I get there, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, you think, okay, well, if it's going to be overcast, well, think about sort of things that you shoot for an overcast day.
Yep.
Or think about how you can make that more interesting if you've got a cloud, or, you know, using maybe grads in the sky just to bring out details, unless it's just a plain white overcast. Can you mix it up and shoot maybe something, you know, change something to black and white or whatever too, or do they want them all?
we didn't actually discuss that, but I would imagine that, you know, they probably...
But if you're shooting raw, you
yeah.
Anyway.
Exactly.
But yeah, but just make sure you have it all planned out. Have a good backup strategy.
Yep.
As I said, I always say definitely try and keep it in three different places.
Right.
And keep your backup away from the other, your laptop if you can.
Right.
Just in case.
Yep. Cool.
And just go out and enjoy yourself and have a great time.
Oh, I will be doing that, don't you worry.
And of course, this will lead on to other things. And of course, if you can...
Well, that's what Shelton said. Shelton was very positive about it. He said, mate, I know you. He said, you'll come back with some killer images. They'll absolutely love them and they'll come back to you for more.
And of course, the most important thing is maintaining and growing a relationship with the people you're shooting for.
Yeah.
If you can do that, that's going to lead, as you mentioned in your last podcast, that there's a possibility of doing a lot of more different, is it the Shires and things?
They've got 13 Shires in the region, so... Yeah, so there's always
12 after this, mate, you know.
What's that?
Could be another 12 after this one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's a really good step because, I mean, you're like, you know, you're sort of transitioning at the moment. I know that you're probably wanting to get into photography a bit more. So this is a great way to start. And build up relationships with clients is one of the best ways.
Definitely.
And they like the image, you know, when they like the images, they'll tell other people. It'll lead to a lot of other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're always learning, and you learn so much on the, you know, when you're doing these sort of things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, you'll probably go out there, you'll meet other people out while you're shooting that might need photos for something else. You'll meet, you know, just the opportunities are endless, mate. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Take lots of business
Can't
cards.
Wait to see images.
Oh, yeah. You'll see them. Because that was one of the questions I had when I sat down with a client last week. For our meeting to discuss, you know, exactly what was expected of me. I had made a list of questions, and one of the first questions that I had was, can I use the images I shoot in my social media channels? And she said, yeah, absolutely, go for it.
Yes, that's great, you know. I'm sure, yeah, but it's always good to, you know, get that cleared up, you know, so you can use the images for whatever. Yeah. I know that the rules are... Like in New Zealand, I think, is if you're shooting for someone, like if you have a client and you're shooting images for them, you know, I think generally they sort of have pretty much control over the images if you're shooting it specifically for them.
Yeah.
Unless you have in your contract that you're the copyright owner of all the photos. It's not like when we're out shooting, of course, we take a photo, and as soon as you take that photo, generally you have copyright on that image. But if you're doing it specifically for a client, you have to, you know, make sure that... you have those sort of areas cleared up.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I would imagine that, you know, any time I spoke to a potential client about a gig, that would be always on my list of questions to, you know, just what is acceptable use of these images, you know, from my point of view as the photographer, you know, what can I use them at all, and if so, to what extent, you know?
Well, it's like wedding or portrait photography. You know, if you're doing someone's portraits or weddings, they don't probably want them all plastered over Facebook or something.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So, but no, I think you'll have a blast. But just make sure, take backups of everything in case something breaks down. Have you got a backup body in case you...
I can take my old Konica Minolta 7D as a backup.
Well, tell you, I always have a backup just in case.
Yep.
You don't want to be away from home, you know, halfway through it, and then have nothing else. And I guess, I mean, you always have the option if you could always rent it or something if you needed it too, couldn't you?
Not out there, mate.
I mean, I could probably just sit there.
I'd have to drive 6 hours to find somewhere where I could rent something.
Yeah, problem. But just, you know, that's what I always have a spare body and spare, you know, lots of spare batteries. Make sure your batteries are charged. Don't forget to pack a battery charger.
Yep. Oh, no. That's always in my camera bag anyway.
Yeah, you know. Right. But, and just enjoy yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Mike, thank you very much for your input, mate. I really appreciate it.
No worries, mate. I'm more than happy to help, and it's been a pleasure talking to you on the podcast, mate.
So where can people check out your photo books?
Well, I have my website, which is just mikeholman.com. That's two L's.
Yep.
H-O-L-L-M-A-N. Mikeholman.com is my main website. So I just have my portfolio on there with maybe 30 or 40 images, with about 3 or 4 different portfolios. Or, of course, on Facebook, on Mike Holman Photography.
Nice.
which I generally post something every day or two of what I've been shooting recently, or put some tips on from other photographers that I find online that people seem to like to read. So.
And are you producing a calendar every year?
I did nine this year, and I do that through various...
Nine different calendars?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was for 2010, I did nine. But that, I'm shooting for publishers in this one. Right. And for next one, I got an exclusive three calendar deal for 2011 for Brown Trout, which are a big calendar company.
Oh, okay.
They're based in the... I think they're one of the largest ones. They're based in the States, but the people I've been working with are actually in Melbourne. This is their first time into the New Zealand market, so I've just done three calendars for them.
Lovely.
So we should be out in the shops in the next week or two, hopefully.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's for 2011, and I'm shooting for 2012 at the moment.
Wow.
So they'll have to be... And the 2012 images will be due by February, December, February.
Is that right?
Mm.
Wow. Mm. Okay.
They tend to work reasonably far out.
Yeah, right.
I'm just working on another book at the moment. I've got a lot of time on this one. It's not due till the end of next year, which is going to be a big, hopefully a big 200-page coffee table, you know, style book.
Nice. Just New Zealand landscapes?
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Okay.
I can't talk too much. I'm not allowed to talk too much
about it. Fair enough. I understand.
But the other ones I've done in the past have been on New Zealand travel on landscapes and specific regions like Queenstown and Rotorua, which has been great. So
awesome.
It's been for Hachette, which has been having a great relationship working with them. So
right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it's all good fun, mate.
All right, Mike. Well, thank you very much for your input. Really do appreciate it.
No worries, mate. And if you have any questions, or just flick me an email or anything else, if you have any questions before you go.
Excellent. Will do. All right.
Thank you.
Catch you later.
Have a great week. Shutters Inc.
For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.